Rose, there would be a third and subtler option, which she would push them toward. But she could not comprehend the kind of murderous obsession driving the limper. She would leave opportunities and openings. She would give second chances when the only workable choice would be to go for the throat. It was a night when hell was in session. No one rested. The limper hid so deeply in his defenses, he could do nothing to stay the harassment. The pace of the attacks increased as dawn neared, as though the White Rose wanted them to know she could make their day more horrible than had been their night. The army was half gone when the sun rose. The tree god had won the first round. His creatures refused a second round by day. The mantis cleared the sky. The wind whale floated miles up and miles to the south. The limper collected his ragtag horde and began marching toward his next conquest. The time of easy killing was over. Now those who stood in the limper's path were warned of his coming. Always that monster out of the plane of fear hung overhead, a sword of doom ready to fall at the slightest lapse in attention. The White Rose made no mistakes. Whenever the limper launched an attack, the mantas came fast and hard, trying to force him to cower inside his spells of protection. He fought back, brought a few down. Increasingly, he held back in hopes the wind whale would stray too close. He looked for new weapons in the ruins of his conquests. The White Rose made no mistakes. Not once. But the maniacal determination of the limper kept his army moving, gaining on his quarry. Till he gained his revenge, even the enmity of the tree god was just an annoyance. The whine of a mosquito. But after the kill? Oh, after the kill. Chapter 23. Smed said, "There's something wrong."
"I'm beginning to get your drift," Tully said. "You think there's something wrong?"
Smedz had said so 5 times.
"So does Timmy."
Timmy had agreed with Smedz 3 or 4 times.
"They're right,"
Fish said, venturing an opinion for the first time. "There should be more industry. Carts on the road, hunters and trappers." They were out of the great forest, but had not yet reached cultivated country. In these parts, the tide of civilization was on the ebb.
"Look there,"
Timmy said. He pointed, winced. His hand still hurt him. A burnt-out cottage lay a little off the road. Smedz recalled pigs and sheep and wisecracks about the smell when they had been headed north. There was no smell now. Fish lengthened his stride, going to investigate. Smedz kept up with him. It was grisly, though the disaster lay far enough in the past that the sight was no longer as gruesome as it had been. The bones bothered Smedz the most. There were thousands scattered, broken, gnawed, mixed. Fish examined them in silence, moving around slowly, stirring them with the tip of his staff. After a while, he stopped, leaned on his staff, stared down. Smedz moved no closer. He had a feeling he did not want to see what Fish saw. The old man settled onto his haunches slowly, as though his own bones ached. He caught hold of something, held it up for Smedz. A child's skull. Its top had been smashed in. Smedz was no stranger to death, even violent death, and this was old death for someone he'd never known. It should have bothered him no more than a rumor from the past, but his stomach tightened and his heartbeat quickened. He felt a surge of anger and unfixed hatred. Even the babies, he muttered. They even murdered the babies. Fish grunted. Tully and Timmy arrived. Tully looked bored. The only death that concerned him was the one awaiting him personally. Timmy looked unhappy, though. He said,
"They killed the animals, too? That doesn't make sense. What were they after?"
Fish muttered. "They killed for the sake of the blood, for the pleasure of the deed, the joy and the power to destroy. For the pure meanness of it. We know too many like that already." Smeds asked,
"You think it was the same bunch that killed everybody back up there?"
"Seems likely, don't it?"
"Yeah."
Tully grumbled.
"We gonna hang around here all day, or are we going to get hiking? Smeds, you decided you like it out here with the bugs and furry little things? Me, I want to get back and start enjoying life."
Smeds thought about wine and girls and the scarcity of both in the great forest.
"You got a point, Tully. Even if 5 minutes ain't going to make any difference."
Fish said, "I wouldn't go living too high too sudden, boys. Might get some folks to wondering how you got it. And maybe some hard guys to figuring how to get it away from you."
"Shit," Tully grumbled. "Quit your damned preaching. And maybe give me credit for a little sense."
He and Fish went off. Tully grousing and Fish listening unperturbed with the patience Smeds found astounding. He was ready to strangle Tully himself. Once they hit the city, he didn't want to see his cousin for a month. Or longer.
"How's the hand, Timmy?"
"Don't seem like it's getting any better." "I don't know about burns, you? My skin's got black spots where it was the worst."
"I don't know. I saw a guy once burned so it looked like charcoal."
Smeds hunched up a little, imagining the heat of the spike in his pack burning between his shoulder blades.
"We get to town, you go see a doc or a wizard. Don't fool around, hear?"
"You kidding? The way this hurts? I'd run if I didn't have to carry this damned pack."
The road was festooned with old butcheries and destructions. But the disaster had not been complete. Nearer the city, there were people in the fields, and more as the miles passed, backs bowed with the weight of tragedies, old and new. Man is born to sorrow and despair. Smed shuddered his way out of that. Him, wallowing in philosophical bullshit. They crested a rise, saw the city. The wall was covered with scaffolding. Despite the late hour, men were rebuilding it. Soldiers in gray supervised. Imperials.
"Gray boys," Tully grumbled. "Here comes trouble."
"I doubt it," Fish said.
"How come?"
"There'd be more of them if they were looking for trouble. They're just making sure the repairs get done right."
Tully harumped and scowled and muttered to himself, but did not argue. He had overlooked the obvious. Imperials were sticklers for getting things done right, obsessive about keeping military works in repair. The only delay was occasioned by the construction, not by the soldiers. Tully was not pleased. He was sick of Fish looking smarter than him. Smeds was afraid he would start improvising, trying to do something about that. Something stupid, probably.
"Holy shit," Smeds said, soft as a prayer, half a dozen times as they walked through the city.
Buildings were being demolished, rehabilitated, or built where old structures had been raised.
"They really tore the old town a new asshole."
Which left him uncomfortable. There were people he wanted to see. Were they still alive, even? Wonderstruck, Tully said,
I never seen so many soldiers. At least not since I was a kid.
They were everywhere, helping with reconstruction, supervising, policing, billeted in tents pitched where buildings had been razed. Was the whole damned city inundated with troops? Smed saw standards, uniforms, and unit emblems he'd never seen before.
Something going on here, he said. We better be careful.
He indicated a hanged man, dangling from a roof tree 3 stories up.
Martial law, Fish said.
Means the wise guys are upset.
You're right, Smith. We walk real careful till we find out what's going on and why.
They headed for the place Tully stayed first, it being closest. It was not there anymore. Tully was not distressed.
I'll just stay with you till I get set,
he told Smeds. But Smeds had not paid any rent, so they had thrown his junk into the street for scavengers. After cashing in his empties and stealing what they wanted for themselves, then had let the room to people dispossessed by the disaster. Fish's place had gone the way of Tully's. The old man was not surprised. He said nothing. He did look a little more gaunt and haggard and slumped.
So maybe we can all stuff in at my old lady's place, Timmy said.
He was jittery. Smets figured it was his hand.
Just for tonight. My old man, he doesn't like anybody I hang around with.
Timmy's parents owned the place they lived, though they were as poor as anybody else on the north side. Smets had heard they got it as a payoff from the Gray Boys for informing back in the days when there was still a lot of rebel activity in Orr. Timmy would not say. Maybe it was true. Who cared anymore? They'd probably been on the right side. The Imperials were more honest and better governors, if you were at a social level where who was in charge made any difference. Smeds did not give a rat's ass who ran things as long as they left him alone. Most people felt that way.
Timmy! Timmy Logan!
They stopped, waited while an older woman overhauled them. As she waddled up, Timmy said,
Mrs. Sisko, how are you?
We thought you were dead with the rest of them, Timmy. 40,000 people they killed that night.
I was out of the city, Mrs. Sisko. I just got back.
You haven't been home yet?
People jostled them in the narrow street. It was 3/4 dark, but there were so many soldiers around, nobody needed to run inside to hide from the night. Smeds wondered what the bad boys were doing. Working?
I said I just got in.
Smeds saw he did not like the woman much. She went all sad and consoling. Even Smeds, who did not consider himself perceptive, saw she was just busting because she was going to get to be the first to pass along some bad news.
Your dad and both your brothers, I'm sorry. They were trying to help fight the fires. Your mother and sister, well, they were conquerors. They did what conquerors always do. Your sister. They mutilated her so bad she ended up killing herself a couple weeks ago.
Timmy shook like he was about to go into convulsions.
That's enough, madam, Fish said.
You've buried your blade to the heart. She sputtered.
Why, the nerve,
Tully said.
Piss off, bitch, before I kick your ass up around your ears.
He used that gentle, even tone Smeds knew meant maximum danger. So, Cousin Tully had a little canker of humanity hidden away after all, though he would not admit it on the rack.
I can't handle this, Timmy said. I think I better stay dead.
Fish said, "That woman won't let you rest in peace, Timmy."
"I know. I'll do what I got to do. But not now. I know a place called the Skull and Crossbones where we can put up cheap. If it's still there."
It was there. It was a place the invaders would have ignored as too contemptible to burn. It made Smeds think of a hooker still working 20 years past her prime. Pathetic and desperate. An Imperial corporal sat in a chair out front, leaning back against a wooden wall that had forgotten the meaning of paint. He held a bucket of beer in his lap. He seemed to be napping. But when they were a few steps from the door, he opened his eyes, checked them over, nodded, took a drink. "Catch's emblem?" Smets asked Fish inside. "Yes. Night Stalkers." The Night Stalker Brigade was the crack outfit in the Northern Army, rigorously trained for night operations and combat under wizard's war conditions. Smed said, "I thought they were out east somewhere, trying to finish the Black Company." The proudest honor on the standard of the Night Stalkers was their defeat of the Black Company at Queen's Bridge. Before Queen's Bridge, those mercenaries had been so glibly invincible that half the Empire had been convinced the gods themselves were on their side. "They're here now." "What the hell is going on around here?" "Guess we better find out. What we don't know could eat us up." Timmy talked to the owner, whom he knew slightly. The man claimed he was full up with the dispossessed. None of those guests were evident. He hinted he might find space, though, if fate took a hand. Fishing for a bribe, Smets figured, which he would follow with a deep gouge.
"How much leverage on fate are we talking?" Timmy asked.
"Oval and a half. Each."
"You goddamned thief.
Take it or leave it." The Night Stalker corporal stepped past Smeds and Timmy and plunked his bucket down in front of the landlord, who had gone as pale as death.
"That's twice today, dog meat. And this time I heard it myself."
The landlord gulped air, grabbed the bucket, and started to fill it.
"Don't try," the corporal said. "Offer me a bribe, and you'll stay on the labor gang forever."
He eyed Timmy and Smeds.
"You guys pick yourself a room. An old shit for brains here for a night."
"I was just joshing with the guys, Corporal."
"Sure, I could tell. You had them rolling around on the floor. Bet you'll have the guy in the black mask in stitches. He loves you comedians."
Smeds asked, "What's going on around here, Corporal? We've been out of town."
"I could tell. I guess you can see your basic situation. Some bandits and deserters tore the place up. They wasn't too happy about that. Down to the tower. Since we was in the neighborhood, we was one of the outfits got to come in and keep order. The Brigadier, she started out life in the slums of Neil. She figures here's a chance to get even with the kinds of assholes who made life hell when she was a kid. So you got thieves hanging from the roof trees. You got your pimps and priests and pushers. Your sharpers and your fences and your whores won't learn no better working on the labor gangs 18 hours a day, so your regular citizens can get on with putting their lives back together. You ask me, she's too damn lenient. Gives them too many chances. Shithead here, the famous profiteer. He's done used up two of his shots now. First time, he got paraded through the streets with a sign around his neck and got a week on the labor gang. This time, he gets 30 lashes in 2 weeks. Because he's got all that shit between his ears and ain't going to learn dick about how he can't get away with it. Next time,
They're going to drag him over to Mayfield Square and stick a spear up his butt and let him sit on it till he rots. The corporal took a long drink from his refilled bucket, wiped his mouth on his sleeve, grinned. Brigadier says, let the punishment fit the crime. He took another long drink, looked at the landlord.
You ready to go do it, asshole?
As he was about to follow the landlord into the street, the corporal paused.
I reckon you boys will be fair to your host here and treat his place right. Unless you're looking for careers in construction.
He grinned again and went.
Goddamn, Tully said. Yeah,
Smeds agreed. Fish said, I have a feeling we're not going to be comfortable in this new war.
Not for long, Smeds said. But sufficient unto the day. Right now, I need to get drunk, get laid, get a night's sleep somewheres besides on the ground. Not necessarily in that order, Tully said.
Timmy put on a strained smile.
A bath wouldn't hurt anything either.
Let's get doing what we gotta do.
Chapter 24. We come over this hill after what seemed like forever without seeing people, and there across a valley was this walled place that covered maybe 100 acres. The wall wasn't much. It was maybe 8 or 10 feet high and no thicker than the kind of stone walls cotters put around their sheepfolds.
Looks like a religious retreat, Raven said. No banners or soldiers or anything.
He was right. We'd seen places with the same look before, but never so big.
Looks old.
Yes. It has a feel to it, too. Peaceful. Let's go look.
Don't look like a place Croker would pass up, eh?
No. He has a bad case of the curiosities. Let's hope he hung around long enough to let us gain some ground.
We went over and found out our guesses were right. Raven got his wish. The place was a monastery called the Temple of Traveler's Repose and was a kind of warehouse for knowledge. It had been sitting there soaking it up for a couple thousand years. We found out the guys we were chasing had stayed long enough to teach one of the monks a little Jewel City's dialect. In fact, they'd only left that very morning. Raven got all excited. He wanted to head right on out, and the hell with the sun was going to hit the horizon in another hour. I wanted to hit him over the head and slow him down. That monastery looked like a damned good place to take a day off and get human again.
Look here, Case. He cajoled. They'll be making camp by now, right? Traveling with a wagon and a coach, the best they could have done is 25 miles, right? We go all night, we can grab off 20 of that easy.
He learned that about the wagon and coach from the priest.
And then we die. You maybe never need a rest, but I need a rest, and the horses need a rest, and this looks like the perfect place to do it. Hell, look at the name.
He made exasperated noises.
After all this time, I still didn't understand that catching Croker was the most important thing in the world. He was so damn tired himself, his thinking was as screwy as a possum's.
He wasn't the only one running shy of a full load. That priest came down with both feet solid on Raven's side. Raven grinned when he said,
He claims the omens are so bad, they aren't letting anybody onto the grounds. They're even chasing people out.
I had enough of the lingo, learned from Raven to have gotten part of that. Also something about the bad storm coming down from the north. I saw I wasn't going to win this round neither, so I said the hell with it and added a few comments that would have disappointed my old potato-digging mother. I went and shared my misery with the horses. They understood me. Raven worked a deal for some supplies, and we headed out. I wondered how much farther to the edge of the world. We'd already come farther than I'd ever believed possible. We didn't talk much, not because I had the sulks. I'd given up on them and went fatalistic a long time ago. I think Raven was brooding about that bit I'd caught that he hadn't mentioned. A bad storm coming down from the north. In the Jewel City's lingo, bad can mean a couple of three different things, including evil. There was barely any light left when we came to a strip of woods.
"Going to have to walk this part," Raven said. "That priest said the road through is good enough, but it's going to be hard to follow in the dark."
I grunted. I wasn't thinking about the woods. My mind was on the funny-looking hills on the other side. I'd never seen anything like them. They were all steep-sided, smoothly rounded, covered with a tawny dry grass and nothing else. They looked like the humped backs of giant animals, snoozing with their legs tucked up underneath them and their heads turned around behind them, out of sight. They were very dry, those hills. The light to see them hadn't ever been good, but I was sure I'd seen a few black burn scars before it got too dark to see anything. The woods were bone dry, too. The trees were mostly some kind of scruffy oak with small brittle leaves that had points almost as sharp as holly leaves. They were a sort of blue-gray color instead of the deep green of oaks in the north. A feeble excuse for a creek dribbled through the heart of the wood. We watered ourselves and the horses and took time out for a snack. I was too tired to waste energy talking except to say, "I don't think I got what it takes for another 15 miles. Uphill." Half a minute later, he surprised me by saying, "Don't know if I got what it takes either. Only so far you can go on willpower." "Hip bothering you?" "Yes. Might ought to have it looked at. Good job for Croker, since he done it. Let's see how much we got left." We managed about 6 more miles, the last couple up the dry grass hills, before we sort of collapsed by silent agreement. Raven said, "This time we'll give it an hour before we hit it again." He was stubborn, that bastard. We hadn't been there 5 minutes before I spotted evidence of that bad storm from the north. "Raven?" He looked. He didn't have nothing to say. He just sighed and helped me watch the lightning. There wasn't a cloud between us and the stars.
Chapter 25.
Toad Killer Dog, carrying the Wicker Man, eased over a ridgeline, halted. He shivered. For leagues now, they had sensed the presence of that place over there, an aura ever increasing in intensity and its ability to irritate. If they were sons of the shadow, this was a fastness of the enemy, a citadel of light. There were few such places left. They had to be expunged when found.
"Strange magic," the Wicker Man whispered. "I don't like it."
He glanced at the northern sky. The creatures of the tree god were up there somewhere, just beyond sight. This was not a good place to be, sandwiched between them and that place. The Wicker Man said,
"We'd better do it fast."
Toad Killer Dog had no desire to do it at all. He would bypass, given a choice. He had choices, of course, but not many. He might get away with defying the Wicker Man once. That once had to be saved. In the meantime, he responded to the ego of the Wicker Man, doing the insane, the stupid, sometimes the necessary, biding his time. The army presently numbered 2,000. The men had collapsed in exhaustion the moment their commander stopped moving. The Wicker Man summoned 2 to help him dismount. They were rich men, everyone. Their packs bulged with the finest treasure taken from cities their masters had devoured and from fallen comrades. Few had been with the army more than 2 months. Of the 2,000, only 100 had crossed the sea with the Limper. Those who did not desert had no cause to be optimistic about a long life. The Wicker Man leaned against Toad Killer Dog.
"Scum," he whispered. "All scum."
Close. Most, with any spark of courage or decency, deserted quickly. The Wicker Man eyed the sky. A faint smile stretched the ruin of his mouth.
"Do it," he said.
The soldiers groaned and grumbled as they stood to arms, but stand to they did. The Wicker Man stared at the temple. It abused his confidence, but he could not discern any concrete cause.
"Go!"
he slapped Toad Killer Dog's shoulder.
"Scout it, damn you!"
He then assembled the surviving witchmen from the northern forest. They had not been much use lately, but he had a task for them now. There wasn't a breath of warning. One moment the night was still, except for the chirp of crickets and the uneasy rustle of men on the brink of an assault. The next, it was alive with attacking mantas. They came from every direction, not 50 feet high, in 2s and 3s, and this time their lightning was not their most important weapon. The first flights ghosted in and dropped fleshy, sausage-shaped objects 4 feet long. Boiling, oily flames splashed everywhere. Toad Killer Dog howled in the heart of an accurately delivered barrage. Soldiers shrieked, horses screamed and bolted, baggage weapons caught fire. The Wicker Man would have screamed in rage had he been able. But had he had the capability, he would not have had the time. He had been preparing a snare, and while he had concentrated on that, they had caught him flat-footed. He was enveloped in flame. He dared not think of anything else. He suffered badly before he shielded himself with a chrysalis of protective spells. He was sprawled on the earth then, his wicker body charred and broken. His pain was terrible, and his rage more so. Bladders continued to fall. Mantas that had dumped theirs returned with their lightning. The Wicker Man extended his charm to include a pair of shamans. One struggled to lift the Wicker Man's battered frame. The other found the tag ends of the Limper's charm and began to weave it stronger. The remnant of the Wicker Man waved a blackened arm. A manta tumbled from the night, little lightning bolts popping and snapping around it. The Wicker Man waved again. Toad Killer Dog charged the temple. Most of the men followed. A quick, successful assault would mean shelter from the horror in the sky. That horror pursued them. The air above the Limper had become too dangerous. Fire bladders fell and blossomed orange, finishing the baggage and supplies. Safe now, the Wicker Man forgot the fires. He chained his anger. He returned to his interrupted task. As Toad Killer Dog neared the monastery wall, something reached out and flicked him away the way a man flicks a bug. Soldiers tumbled around him. There would be no shelter from the devils in the sky. Yet a few men did keep going, their progress unimpeded. Why? The mantas came down on rippling wings. Toad Killer Dog hurled himself into the air. His jaws closed on dark flesh. The Wicker Man murmured while the two shamans recovered something from the smoldering remains of a wagon. He beamed at them, oblivious to the surrounding holocaust. The thing they brought him was an obsidian serpent, arrow straight, 10 feet long and 6 inches thick. The detail was astonishingly fine. Its ruby eyes blazed as they reflected the fires. The witch doctor staggered under its weight. One cursed the heat still trapped in it. The Wicker Man smiled his terrible smile. He began singing a dark song in the breathless whisper. The obsidian serpent began to change. Life flowed through it. It twitched. Wings unfolded, long wings of darkness that cast shadows where no shadows should have been. Red eyes flared like windows suddenly opened on the hottest forges of hell. Glossy talons, like obsidian knives, slashed at the air. A terrible screech ripped from a mouth filled with sharp, dark teeth. The thing's breath glowed, faded. It began trying to break away, its gaze fixed on the nearest fire. The Wicker Man nodded. The shamans released it. The thing flapped shadow wings and plunged into the fire. It wallowed like a hog in mud. The Wicker Man beamed approval. His lips kept forming words. That fire faded, consumed. The thing leaped to another, then to another. The Wicker Man indulged it for several minutes. Then the tenor of his whisper changed. It became demanding. Commanding. The thing shrieked a protest. A fiery haze belched from its mouth. Still screaming, it rose into the night, following orders. The Wicker Man turned his attention to the Temple of Traveler's Repose. It was time to see by what sorcery the place kept itself inviolate. The shamans took hold and carried him toward the temple wall. Chapter 26. Bowman's knuckles were white. They ached. He had a death grip on some windwail organ. The monster had dropped low enough that the flash and fire and chaos down below gave him a clear perspective of just how far he was going to fall if he relaxed his grip for an instant. Silent and Darling were close by, watching. One false move, and Silent would give him a kick in the butt and a chance to see if he could fly. It was testing time. The White Rose had orders to stop the old horror here, where there might be help from its victims. This time, she had woven him into her plan. In fact, he had the feeling he was the plan. She had not explained anything. Maybe she was playing Woman of Mystery. Or maybe she really did not trust him. He was in charge. Till he did something unacceptable and bit a boot with his butt on his way to doing a swan dive into hell. Menhirs seldom got any feeling into their speech, but the one that materialized behind his left shoulder managed sorrow, as it reported.
He shielded himself. Neither fire nor lightning can reach him.
The surprise had seemed a wan hope anyway, but a long shot worth trying. And his followers.
Decimated again. The monster is unconquerable, though. He suffers, but pain just makes him angrier.
He's not invincible at all. And you will see if I get close to him. Bowman's least favorite talking buzzard cackled wildly.
You're big timer, eh? That thing is gonna squish you like a bug, Seth Chalk.
Bowman's turned away from the bird. His stomach flopped as he looked down again. The buzzard was determined to get his goat. He was amused by the bird's optimism. He had learned self-control in a hard school. He had been married for 30 years. "Isn't it time you stones made your move?" He tried a disarming smile, a man with nothing on his mind but the issue at hand. A little scheme had begun to fester in the back of his head, a way to put that snide vulture in his place. The stone said,
"Soon. What will you contribute to the farce?"
Before he could temporize, the buzzard shrieked,
"What the hell is that?"
Bowman's whirled. That damned bird wasn't scared of anything, but it was squeaky with fear now. Vast dark wings spanned the night, masking the moon and stars. Fires animated wise and evil eyes. Another limbed huge needle teeth. Those malignant eyes were fixed on those who rode the wind whale. Silent made frantic warning signs that did no good. Bowman's did not recognize the thing. It was nothing of the domination, brought out of the barrow land. He was an expert on those and believed he knew every rag and feather and bone that had gone into them. Neither was it something of the lady's empire, or she would have made it her own thing during her heyday. So it had to be loot from one of the cities desolated since the limper had come out of the empire. Whatever its provenance, it was dangerous. Bowman's began putting himself into that trance from which it was easiest for him to meet a supernatural challenge. As he opened himself to the energies of another level of reality, fear struck.
"Get on to the next phase!"
he shouted at the scarred men here.
"Now! Recall the mantis! Get everybody off this damned thing!"
Fire-edged wings beat the night. The red-eyed thing streaked toward the wind whale. Bowman's used the strongest warding spell he knew. The monster tortured the night with its shriek of pain, but it came on, its path deflected only slightly. The wind whale shuddered to its impact. All across the wind whale's back, talking menhirs began vanishing, leaving baby thunderclaps. The talking buzzard cursed like a stevedore and flailed at the air. Young mantis screeched in fear. The Torque brothers rushed Bowman's, shouting questions he did not understand. They were going to throw him off. Darling stopped them with a gesture. Below, the wind whale's belly opened and gave birth to a boiling globule of fire. Heat rolled up its flanks. A huge shudder ran its length. Bowman's knuckles grew whiter. He wanted to move back, but his hands had a will of their own and would not turn loose. Another explosion tore the wind whale's belly. The great sky beast dropped a short distance. Upset became panic.
"We're going down!"
one of the Torques shouted in his barbaric eastern gabble.
"Oh, gods, we're going down!"
Darling caught Bowman's eye and in peremptory sign language ordered, "Do something." She was not rattled. Before he could respond, the air filled with icy water spraying from organs on the Leviathan's back. Despite the departure of the menhirs, the wind whale had begun to lose buoyancy. It was shedding ballast high, hoping that would dampen the fires. The chill water helped stifle the panic. Mantas began coming in out of the night, fluttering into the spray. The instant they came to rest, their young scrambled onto their backs, followed by other plains creatures. Once a manta had all the weight it could bear, it flopped to one of the slippery, downsloping launch slides that allowed them to hurtle into space. Another explosion shook the wind whale. It began a slow buckle in the middle. Darling approached Beaumans. She looked like she would put him over the side personally if he did not start doing something more than gawk and shake. How could she stay so damned calm? They were going to die in a few minutes. He closed his eyes and concentrated on the author of the disaster. He tried to pump himself up. He did not know what that thing was, but he would not let it intimidate him. He was the Beaumans who had slain a grandfather of dragons. He was the Beaumans who had walked into the flames, daring the wrath of the lady in all her majesty and strength. But his feet had rested upon solid ground those times. Softly, surely, he murmured the calming mantras, following with the unleashing cycles that would allow him to slide free of his flesh. In a moment, he was adrift in the whale's belly, floating through the flames, watching the dark fire eater. Only because it fed so gluttonously had the wind whale not yet been consumed by a holocaust. He added his skills to the self-protective efforts of the wind whale and the damping of the fire eater's feeding. The flames began to dwindle. He tried to move subtly and do his work unnoticed by the predator. That thing had only one thought. Soon, the wind whale could manage the fires alone. The fire eater tried to breach another gas bladder. Beaumans slapped it away. It tried again, and again, and again, failing, till it flew into a frustrated fit. While it was out of control, Beaumans insinuated tendrils of sorcery. With a jeweler's touch, he evicted the commands of the wicker man. He replaced them with one overwhelming imperative. Destroy the wicker man. Consume him in darkness. Consume him in fire. But rid the earth of his noxious presence. Beaumans retired to his own proper flesh. Physical sight showed him the stars masked by fire-edged wings that spanned half the sky. Those wings tilted. The body they supported dropped toward the place Old Father Tree wanted defended at all costs. Beaumans glanced at Silent and Darling. The dusky, humorless wizard smiled slightly, nodded, made a small gesture to indicate that he had witnessed a job well done. So maybe he was finally off the shit list. He watched the fire eater strike. Damn! It was plunging toward the compound. Limper must have broken in. The wind whale had fallen a long way, too. It was an easy striking distance for the wicker man. The giant of the sky had buckled in the middle, become a sagging sausage. It had no more ballast to shed. Neither could it control its motion through the sky. It was at the mercy of the wind, heading south, still losing altitude. Silent and Darling joined Beaumans. He demanded, "Why did you stay? Why didn't you get the hell off?" Silent's fingers danced as he relayed to Darling. "Knock it off with the waggle fingers. You can talk." Silent gave him a hard look. He did not say anything. The wind whale lurched. Beaumans grabbed an organ stem as he hurtled toward the monster's side in a drop still 3,000 feet till it was over. A gobbet of flame rolled up, singed him. He cursed and clung for his life. The wind whale continued to reel and shudder. It began making a hollow, booming noise that might have been a cry of pain. An overlooked spark had tangled with a slow leak from a gas bladder. The game was about over. There was nothing to be done this time. He was going to die in a few minutes. For some reason, he could not get as upset as he thought he should. Mostly, he was angry. This was not the way for the great Beaumans to go out. Just dragged along,
Without an audience and no great battle to die in? Without a legend to leave behind? He cursed continuously, in an unintelligible mutter. His thoughts, more agile than ever he pretended, scurried around in frantic search for a way to make sure the Wicker Man went with him. There was none. He had no weapon but the Fire Eater, which was a javelin thrown and now beyond his control. The Windwell began settling more rapidly. Fire crept up the aft half of the monster. The bend in its middle grew increasingly pronounced. The sucker was going to break up. Come on. That half is going to go. He began climbing the steepening slope of the forehalf. Silent and Darling scrambled after him. Another explosion. Silent lost his footing. Darling grabbed a tree-like organ with one hand, caught him with the other. She hoisted him to his feet. That ain't no woman, Bowmans muttered. Not like I ever saw. The rear half of the Windwell began falling faster than the front half. Secondary explosions hurled comets of whale flesh into the teeth of the night. Cursing monotonously, Bowmans continued to scramble away from disaster, every second wondering why he bothered. The fear began to come, feeding on his helplessness. His talents were of no avail. He could do nothing but run from the conquering fire till there was nowhere left to flee. Yet another explosion ripped and wrenched the Windwell. Bowmans fell. Below, the aft half of the monster tore free and fell away, the whole enveloped in flames. The rest of the Windwell bobbed violently, trying to return to horizontal. It yawed and rolled while it bobbed. The old sorcerer hung on and cursed. A whimper caught his ear. Not 5 feet away, he saw the glowing eyes of an infant manta. When the Windwell fragment began to stabilize, he crawled thither. They forgot you, little fellow. Come on out here. The kit hissed and spat and tried to use its lightning. It could generate no more than a spark. Bowmans dragged it out into the moonlight. You are a tiny one, aren't you? No wonder they missed you. The kit was no bigger than a half-grown cat. It could not be more than a month old. Bowmans cradled the infant in the crook of his left arm. It ceased struggling almost immediately. It seemed content to be held. The old wizard resumed his journey. The Windwell had become as stable as it could. Bowmans eased nearer the side. He looked down, just in time to see the other half hit ground. Silent and Darling joined him. As always, their faces were emotionless masks. One dusky, one pale. Silent stared down at the earth. Darling seemed more interested in the baby manta. Bowman said, Under 2,000 feet now, but that's still a long way to fall. And there's still that to concern us. That meant the small fires still burning back where the rear half had broken away. One of those could reach another gas bladder any minute. We should get as far forward as we can and hope for the best. He tried to sound more hopeful than he felt. Silent nodded. Bowmans looked around. The monastery was burning merrily, fired by the Fire Eater. So that had worked. Some. But when he listened the right way, he could sense a knot of rage and pain seething amidst the flames. The Limper had survived again. And his scheme had worked some, too. Chapter 27 I had a hard time believing it. Raven had given up. His hip must have hurt a lot more than he wanted to admit. He hadn't moved since he had gone down and hadn't said nothing since his body beat down his will. I think he was ashamed. I really wished the son of a bitch would figure out that he didn't have to be a Superman. I wasn't going to make him stop being my buddy because he was human. I was as wiped out as he was, but I could not lay down and die. That show up around the monastery was getting flashier all the time. In fact, some of the fireworks was headed our way. That made me too nervous to crap out, though even my toenails were tired. Another blast. A rose of fire bloomed in the sky. A big hunk of something started falling, spinning off smaller hunks of fire. I realized what I was seeing. "Raven, you better get your ass up and look at this mother." He grunted, but he didn't do it. "It's a wind whale, asshole. Out of the plane of fear. What do you think of that?" I saw a couple get wiped during the big bloodletting up to the barrel end. So it seems. Mr. Ambition had rolled over. His voice was cool, but his face was fish-belly white, like he'd stepped around a corner and bumped noses with Old Man Death. "So how come it's here?" Then I shut up. I'd imagined up a reason. "Not for me, kid. Who on the plane would know where to look for me? Who would care?" "Then?" "It's the battle from the Barrowlands still going on. It's the tree god head to head with whatever I felt breaking loose up there." Light flashed. Fire busted out of one end of the part of the wind whale that was still up. "That thing isn't going to stay up there much longer. Should we go see if we can do something?" He didn't say anything for at least a minute. He looked up at the hump-backed hills like he was thinking maybe he had enough left to go catch Croaker after all. He couldn't be more than 5-10 miles away, could he? And then he levered himself to his feet, wincing, obviously favoring his bad hip. I didn't ask. I knew he'd claim it was just the chill air and cold ground. He told me, "Better get the horses. I'll drag our stuff together." "Big job you took on yourself there, old buddy, since we basically just dropped in our tracks when we couldn't go anymore." Since he didn't have much to do, he mostly just stood there watching that flying disaster cross the sky. He looked like he was being asked to mount the gallows and put the noose around his own neck. "I've been thinking, Case," Raven said as we came down off the knee of the most northerly of those goofy humped hills, headed northeast, chasing that drifting wind whale fragment. "Brooding is the word I would have picked, old buddy. And you've been at it since the day they finally put the Dominator down. Looks like that explosion a while back was the last one." The fragment was drifting on a course that would intercept ours. A few fires flickered on one end. It was turning end for end slowly, but it stopped its fall. "Maybe. But you say something definite like that, the gods will stick it to you. Let's just hope it clears the woods. Be rough landing in there." "What were you thinking?" "About you and me, Croaker and his gang, the lady, silent darling. About all the things we had in common but still couldn't get along." "I didn't see all that much you had in common. Not once you got past having the same enemies." "Neither did I for a long time. And none of them saw it either. Else we all might have tried a little harder. I tried to look like I gave a shit at 3 in the morning. Basically, we're all lonely, unhappy people looking for our place, Case. Loners who'd really rather not be, but don't know how. When we get to the door that would let us in or out, we can't figure out how to work the latch string." "I'll be damned. That was about as open up and expose what's inside a remark as I ever got out of him. Filled with longing and conviction. Well, shave my head and call me Baldy. I've been right up here beside him since a couple of years ago. You don't see the changes going on in people when you're standing up close. This wasn't the Raven I'd first met, before his ego and misadventure had gotten his soul trapped among the shadow evils of the Barrowland, before its cleansing. He had returned from the prison of the heart dramatically altered. Hell, he wasn't even the same man who had spent all his time drunk on his ass in ore, neither. I had kind of mixed feelings. I'd admired and liked and gotten along pretty good with the old Raven. Maybe I would again, once he got through his transition. I did not know what to say to him, though I was sure he wanted a response. His knack for befuddling me never changed. So did you figure out how to work it? I have an unsettling premonition, Case. I'm almost paralyzed by a dread that I'm about to find out if I've learned anything. He stared at the piece of wind whale. I checked it, guessed it was about 2 miles away and 500 feet up. The breeze was bringing it to us. We're gonna chase it back into the hills if it carries that far? You tell me, Case. This was your idea. He paused to whisper to his horse. The animals were not excited about hiking around at night either, even if they didn't have to carry anybody. Flame mushroomed out of the wind whale. Before the roar of the explosion reached us, I said, "We're not going to have to worry about climbing any hills." The wind whale came down fast, turning end for end. When it was about 200 feet off the ground, some chunks fell off and it stopped coming down so fast. I had a pretty good idea where it would hit. We hurried toward the spot. Then what was left nosed down, sped up, and hit the ground about a mile away. It bounced back into the air, maybe 100 feet high. It kept coming, straight at us now. At the peak of its bounce, it exploded again. It bounced 2 more times before it stayed down and just slid to a stop. "Be careful," Raven said. "There might be more explosions." Fire still burned on the wind whale. Somewhere inside it was making a noise like somebody beating on the granddaddy of all bass drums. I said, "It ain't dead yet. Look there." The end of a tentacle lay just a couple yards from me. It was jumping around like a snake with a toothache. "Huh. Let's hobble the horses." Excited all to hell, Raven was. Like he spent his whole life hanging around wind whales so close he could smell their bad breath. And this one had that all over. I caught something in the firelight. "Hey! There's people up on top of that sucker." There had to be. Where? "There. Right over that black patch." I pointed. Some guys up there were hauling around on something. Raven looked. "Looks like somebody trying to get somebody else out from under something. Let's get up there and give them a hand." I left my horse unhobbled. Raven grinned at me. "The exuberant folly of youth. Where does it go?" I started climbing a blubbery, stinky cliff. He went looking for a bush to